Welcome to Digital Health Transformers, a podcast series. In this podcast, we'll explore the dynamic world of healthcare innovation, one conversation at a time. I'm your host, Bryce Barger, and today we have an awe-inspiring guest at the forefront of transforming the healthcare landscape. We are pleased to welcome Richard Palleria to the show today. Richard is an accomplished entrepreneur and leader in the healthcare technology space. Currently serves as CEO and co-founder of Kermit, a Baltimore-based company revolutionizing spend management for high-cost implantable medical devices. Under Richard's leadership, over the last decade, Kermit has saved hospitals more than $200 million, business owners through, We are pleased to welcome Richard Palleria to the show today. Richard is an accomplished entrepreneur and leader in the healthcare technology space. He currently serves as CEO and co-founder of Kermit, which is a Baltimore-based company revolutionizing spend management for high-cost implantable medical devices. Under Richard's leadership, for over a decade, Kermit has saved hospitals more than $200 million. Richard also chairs membership for Entrepreneurs Organization's Baltimore chapter, empowering business owners through networking and learning. His previous ventures include founding and pioneering logistics consulting firm and a leading IT at AIM International. With over 20 years of experience founding, building, and leading innovative companies, Richard offers valuable insights on entrepreneurship, health tech, and driving change. Kermit has pioneered an impartial, evidence-based approach to financial control in healthcare. The company is transforming the hospital implant billing process through automation and insight. We look forward to an engaging discussion where we are exploring Richard's journey, how we can maximize savings in the healthcare supply chain, and much more. Thank you for joining us today, Richard. How are you today?
Yeah, I'm great, Bryce. It's my pleasure to be here.
Yeah, I really, really appreciate your time and really excited to have this conversation. So kind of getting started here with maybe the start of Kermit, can you share maybe a pivotal moment or experience from your journey that significantly shaped your approach to business as you started?
Sure. So Kermit is my fifth business that I've started, but really my first one that has achieved any scale by purpose. Everything else that I'd done in the past was more of a solopreneur kind of thing, lifestyle businesses, and they did well. They put money in my pocket, but this was an opportunity to change the landscape of healthcare, especially around the way that hospitals procure and use implantable medical devices. So we're invested in hospital supply chain, coming alongside and really transforming the way that they've done something for 50 years. It's been a long time for them. And so, you know, like I said, this is the first enterprise at scale that I've had to build. And I did it with two co-founders who were former medical device reps. They came into my office at the time. I was doing something else. I was running on their business that I'd started. And they told me a fantastic tale about how as med device reps, they would stand in the operating room with a surgeon. They weren't providing any patient care. They were standing there basically selling med devices during the surgery while the patient was, you know, under anesthesia on the table. And as they developed this story for me, I just became more fascinated about how something can be, you know, so fundamentally broken for a period of time, and so many different operators were involved in how this would come about. For example, they tally everything that is sold to the hospital during the surgery on a piece of paper, and then they mark down the price at the end of the surgery, and they walk that paper down the hallway to purchasing, turning that in, expecting to need a purchase order. And so, yeah, when I heard the story, that was my reaction too. I was just kind of blown away. Went home that evening, thought about what they had said. And, you know, I wasn't looking to start a new business at the time, but I thought, we got a real opportunity to change something for the better by introducing technology into this space. And so kind of really didn't sleep that night, came back the next day and caught up with them and said, you know, let's try to put something together and kind of see where it goes. That was 13 years ago.
That's very interesting. You would think that definitely in the world of, which they're obviously use so much technology in the surgical space, that they would still be using the old pen and pad approach when it comes to that. That's very interesting. I had no idea about that. Obviously, you know, the healthcare technology space is very dynamic. What are some of the challenges that you guys faced, and maybe how did you overcome those challenges?
So you can imagine this area that I'm talking about, you've got these various players. You get, you know, the hospital is providing the services, but you've also got a surgeon in there, and they may or may not be aligned with the hospital. They may be an employee. They may not be an employee. They have their own interests. And fundamentally, their first interest is ensuring that they have the best outcome for the patient. They want to make sure they get in and out of that operating room quickly, safely, that the patient has, you know, minimal blood loss, they have a quick recovery, and that ultimately, you know, they're pain-free at the end. A lot of these types of surgeries that we deal with are orthopedic in nature. Maybe they're cardiovascular, things like stents and pacemakers. Anything where there's a med device involved is a category that we play in. And so then you have a patient, you know, who sometimes doesn't have any say. They certainly don't have any say when they're under anesthesia. They're not able to function or do anything. And you've got the underpinning of all of that, which is basically a business transaction going on in a healthcare setting. And for a long time, that was kind of a dirty word. You wouldn't say the word business or transaction in a healthcare setting. But now, where we are, you know, a lot of hospitals are, in fact, every hospital is extremely focused on not just the revenue side, but the cost side as well. And I think COVID really did some interesting things to bring awareness to supply chain, especially around healthcare. And so, you know, a lot of notoriety now in healthcare supply chain, attracting some really good people, some smart people to come in and revolutionize things. And so, you know, we had an opportunity to actually participate in that. And I think one of the earliest challenges, to answer your question, was the fact that my two co-founders were former med device reps. And here they were kind of leaving that world. You could say ostensibly a lot of secrets that they had at the time, and coming in and uncovering a lot of that, how things work, that type of thing for their brand new customers who, you know, they're on the other side of the equation, so to speak. So there was some, sure, we were taking money away from their former employers and their former competitors and trying to right size things. But you kind of fast forward now to where we are 13 years later, there's been a maturity in this category and a hyper-focus on cost reduction. It's not as novel as it was 10, 13 years ago when we started this, to say, hey, what's really going on in my operating room? Am I paying for three screws when only two were used in the surgery? How do I determine that? Now it's more about, how do we make this a super efficient transaction? This whole thing where it's a very choreographed dance that has to happen in real time in an operating room to get a patient in, get the procedure done, and get them out safely and still keep the cost low. How can we do that for both parties? Can we do it? Can we make a difference for the patient? Well, we're going to save some money for the hospital. We might be able to pass that on to the insurance company. We're certainly helping the hospital save money. As you mentioned, it's now well over $200 million in 13 years we've done. But what about the surgeon? And what about this device rep? There's probably things that we can do on behalf of their experience to make this more pleasant, more efficient. They're not having to do paperwork anymore, those types of things. So we're more of a facilitator now in the middle, making that whole thing work in a kind of a smooth, seamless way, the same way every single surgery, every single day, all year long.
Right. And, you know, getting into the role of data analytics in kind of the healthcare supply chain, I mean, as a leader in the healthcare technology space, how do you kind of perceive the role of data analytics in optimizing supply chains and especially in that same context of high medical cost and high device medical cost?
So for a long time, you know, many years, hospital supply chain folks and even senior finance folks in a hospital would go, you know, sit down with the surgeon and say, like, look, let's look at the costs. Is there something else we could be doing that we could have the same outcome with the patient, but we do it at a lower cost? And the surgeons don't want to hear that. I mean, I can say that with a smile on my face. My dad was a doctor, and I watched him practice cardiology for, you know, probably better part of 35 years. I even went to work in his office for a period of time. A really good physician doesn't want to be told, you know, how to practice medicine. They've got their thing down, and they've got a process, and they're really focused on the patient and the patient experience, the patient care. So, you know, when you don't have data, or you think you have anecdotal data, and you sit down with a surgeon, they're going to be able to debunk that very quickly. They typically are going to find errors in that data that you put together, because they understand the clinical nature and the technical nature of that data. You're looking at the ones and zeros as an administrator. This is a place where you really need to lean on an expert, somebody who understands these med devices. You know, one of the big disservices, I think, in my opinion, that our hospitals have done is relying on supply chain to optimize a category that's highly technical, like implantable medical devices. When you're asking them to also negotiate their landscape and lawn care services and their linen and purchase MRI and CT machines and capital goods, also be an expert in 28 different categories of implantable medical devices. You're talking about hundreds of different vendors with lots of different technology, some very cutting edge stuff like biologics, for example. A lot of stuff that doesn't have a long track record of data to prove whether it even works or not. And so it's just a very difficult conversation to bring together both the administrative side of this and the clinical side of this. But when you do bring empirical data, as you're asking about, you actually have an opportunity to speak to a surgeon in a way they can understand. They want to know, just show me the evidence. Show me that I'm spending more. Because until you just tell me that I'm spending more, it's not going to resonate with me, because I know what I'm doing. But if you show me that every single time I do this and it adds $800 to my case, and everybody else is having the same outcome at a less cost, I'm willing to go have dinner with a couple of surgeons and figure that out, because I want this place to be solvent. It's writing a check to me. And I think that would be a thing I would like to do, is, you know, being a good steward and part of the equation.
Sure. Can you share, you know, can you share a specific example where that data analytics played like a crucial role in enhancing efficiency and the decision making within the healthcare supply chain?
Sure. When I mentioned this example of how this all takes place in surgery, where there's a surgeon who's doing the operation, you have the clinical staff there in the operating room who are helping, nurses, scrub techs who are handling the implants, whatnot. And then you've got this sales rep who's there. Now, what they're not standing next to the patient. They're in a what's called a back table, which is a non-sterile area of the operating room, but they are in the operating room many times.
Right.
We were able to sit down with a chief of orthopedics at a hospital in Maryland a couple of years back. And we were showing him, we had come across some data that showed there was probably about $150,000, $160,000 worth of wasted implants. What do I mean by wasted? It means they were opened and they were used in some fashion, but they weren't implanted. And so somebody had to pay for them. And so some practice was going on that we wanted to get to the bottom of and figure out, is there something what the surgeon was doing? Is there something that the rep was doing? Maybe the two of them had worked together for a long time and had a comfort level and were wasting these implants, but something was going on. And so we showed this data to the chief orthopedics, who was a practicing surgeon, did his own plenty of surgeries on his own during that time. And he looked at the data and he said, "That's really interesting. You have my cases inside of your software?" We said, "Of course we do, doctor." And he said, "Can you go look up my case from yesterday with, I'll just say, Mrs. Smith, you know, and tell me, I know I had a wasted implant." And I turned to the rep and I said, "You're not charging me for that, correct?" And the rep said, "Don't worry, doc, I got it." And so we pull up, we found the case he's referring to, we pull it up, and sure enough, $3,000 charge for a femoral implant that was never used. And that was the end of the conversation. We were in the middle of the meeting. He grabbed his white lab coat and put it on and went down to the operating room to find that rep And he wanted to quiz him on how that happened. So what's really happening is the surgeons are providing the patient care, but the business side of the transaction, the paperwork and the bill and all that kind of stuff, they're not seeing, and they don't need to be concerned with that. That's not their area. But without them playing a role and having an awareness that this is how this was going down, this kind of stuff was happening under this man's watch the whole time with his surgeons. And he was able to bring this data to bear and show them, look, if we just change one or two things here, we can save this much money. It led to a whole bunch of other things that they went through our data using our consultants sitting down and figuring out what other areas are we maybe wasting or what other opportunities might we have. And so the data can really surface a lot of that, but you need it in order to have those conversations, because typically a surgeon is going to say, look, there's nothing going on. I'm in the operating room. I see that the patient's there. We had a great outcome. Everything's fine. You just got to really go look inside the data.
Yeah. And also when it comes to the doctor, you know, one, focusing on that patient, that's what he wants to focus on. And two, the time that they have, you know, and then being able to, you know, take time out of their day to sit down and go through an analytics and analyze something. It's not what they want to do. It's not what they need to be doing. It's not what they need to be focused on. And having a solution like Kermit is perfect. Getting into some more cost saving strategies and kind of what their impacts look like, could you elaborate on maybe another successful cost saving strategy implemented during your tenure, you know, at Kermit, and kind of showcasing its impact on that healthcare organization?
Sure. So, you know, there are really two fundamental things that that Kermit does. The first is more of a consulting play. We come in and look at all of the spend and all the utilization on the various implantable medical devices in any category. So let's just stay with this notion of orthopedics for a moment. And I'm talking about knee surgery, hip surgery. It could be upper extremity like shoulder surgery, but the large joints in the body. And in all of those types of situations, we've got very expensive implantable medical devices being used. They're made of basically metal and plastic. Is there some technology in there? Yes. But by and large, you know, the stuff that's being used for the last 20 or 30 years is still viable, still works very, very well. And the price points on a lot of those things have come down, even though the industry wants to focus on innovation and bringing new technology to market. And a lot of that, of course, is going to have a higher price tag on it. But is it necessary? Can you use the tried and true stuff and still have a great outcome? And so in a number of projects, we will go in, and what we focus on doing is letting the surgeon use exactly what they want to use. We don't want to change their utilization. We just want to bring the price point of what they're actually buying down to the street level. It's a price that we already know is being honored at one or more hospitals. And we think that, you know, just because somebody is doing less volume of surgery, or maybe sometimes they're doing more and they're not getting the same price as the hospital down the street, that there should be some equity in that. And we're going to pass that cost or that cost savings on, obviously, to the hospital. Our incentive is to get that cost down, because our model is we take a portion of that savings as our fee. So we're both on the same team fighting for the lowest price. We take the process through a typical bid and negotiation, and we run that on behalf of the hospital. So that's the first piece. And there are, you know, millions of dollars in savings. We typically will save a hospital 30% of their annual spend in any category. That's the average. That's the cost reduction effort, but that's not enough. You can bring the cost down, but those costs will creep back up if you're not managing what's actually going on in the operating room. Some of the things, Bryce, that we just talked about with the waste and the fraud and the abuse. So yes, we've built a piece of software that uses business rules and some artificial intelligence and some machine learning to be able to look at a bill and say, for example, you set Johnny's broken wrist with a plate that had two holes in it, but there were three screws used. Where'd the third screw go? There were only two holes in that plate. And so it looks at things like that, and it right sizes, and it makes some checks, and it says, look, we must have had something that was not done correctly on the billing side of this. Let's go back and fix it. Tell the hospital what's okay to pay and what isn't. And then take all that transactional data and create analytics and dashboards and whatnot that you can come share with a surgeon. And so, you know, University of Maryland, for example, which is one of the larger academic health systems here in the state where we're located, over a four-year period, we saved them $55 million just doing that. When we first arrived, they said, our price is optimized. We've been negotiating these contracts for 30 years. We've got a good handle on it. And one of the leaders said, it's not going to cost us anything to try this. They're going to take a portion of the savings. So why don't we just go ahead and try? And that was pretty astute because there were a lot of savings there. And you know, we share that obviously with the leadership, but we can't expect that supply chain person is going to understand how to do this work when we're asking them to do so many other things too. It's a perfect place to bring in an expert, you know, and do that kind of a project.
Yeah, it definitely is. And I love the adage where, you know, of what we spoke about earlier, where you can come to them and show them this data and say, hey, this is where you're wasting money, but it's up to them to then fix it. It's to them to go and find that solution to that, or you're 100% correct. Your costs are going to go right back up. Kind of in your experience, what are some innovative approaches to kind of cost saving in healthcare supply chains that you believe could be more prevalent in the future?
Yeah, you know, there aren't any like secrets or quick fixes to this. It's a lot of hard work. It's a very tedious process to do a bid. And for example, you know, the process that we use, we've honed over 13 years and it works. It's very efficient. We can get the bid done in 60 to 90 days. Whereas a hospital, you know, typically can take a couple months. I've seen some projects go 6 months, even a year. And what that does is it creates a situation where the bidding community, the vendors who supply the hospital with implants, will wear down the hospital with price list after price list and bid after bid. It's very tedious to analyze a spreadsheet that's got, you know, 50,000 SKUs in it. So the machine we've built handles that very, very quickly. And we can ingest a brand new bid in a matter of seconds and turn it back around to the bidder and say, okay, you now met the price we were requesting on this group of products, but this group over here, which we use a lot, you haven't even addressed yet. So you've got to have the ability to do that. You have to do it in near real time to keep the momentum of the process going. And you can't be worn down by the attrition of just the typical bid process that happens in probably lots of other industries, not just the one that we play a part in. But
to be able to compete. Really to allow them to compete with what they're with who they're bidding against, right? It almost feels unfair.
Every other market works that way. You know, why do we do it differently in healthcare? Because you have this other interested party in the surgeon who's not paying the bill. But they're choosing which product to use. And a lot of times, many times, in fact, almost always, I would say, Bryce, there's no price tag on that box. So when they go to make the choice of I'm going to use this device, or I get in and discover maybe there's a tumor in the bone and I've got to do something different as a surgeon. I need a different style implant. Oh, that rep is going to be there with that implant that, you know, it's perfect for that cause. And we don't ever talk about what's this going to cost the patient. We just implant it. So
I'm just only really focusing on outcomes as their specialty, you know, points them to do is to, hey, let me focus on outcomes, not necessarily the cost of this medical device. I really love that. Richard, those are all the questions I have currently. I would love to know if, you know, speak a little bit about Kermit at the close here. Are there any projects you guys are currently working on in the future that you can share with us? Maybe a quick teaser about some current projects you guys are working on at Kermit?
Sure. I think, you know, if you're going to be in the healthcare technology space or any technology space, you're going to be innovating a lot, always innovating. So you can kind of stay one step ahead of what's going on. Things move very quickly, especially the advent of artificial intelligence and how it's playing a role in almost every single industry right now. It's a big focus for us. While we built Kermit in the cloud so that we could get up and running very quickly without having to be integrated with healthcare enterprise systems or go behind their firewall, do a lot of that style of work, We're now being asked by our hospital clients to integrate with their enterprise systems, electronic medical records, enterprise resource planning systems. And these are the well-known brands like Oracle and Workday and whatnot. So we're doing a lot of those integrations too. What the hospitals are finding is because we are capturing the data at the point of use in the operating room, our data tends to be quite clean. We're also quality assurance checking it as it goes into the database. And even if Kermit finds an anomaly and says, okay, the bill was 8,000, but we're going to right size it down to 5. We even have a person go back and look at that to make sure that the technology did what it was supposed to do. So there's a lot of check and balance that is using human beings and artificial intelligence in our process. And so hospitals are saying, you know, you've got very, very clean data. Can we just take that data and ingest it rather than typing it into 3 or 4 different systems along the way? So being asked to do a lot with AI, being asked to do a lot with integrations, and still doing a lot of consulting. There are, you know, still a number of hospitals who are not threatened by what we do, but they really embrace it and they would like some assistance. And they're still looking to save money and they want to deploy those kinds of services too. So still a lot of rolling up our sleeves and getting in the trenches as well.
Like, and I, and coming from OSP side, we can definitely speak to that, the integration side for your EMRs, your EHRs. I know that can be a beast. Definitely an exciting project in the future and something that is necessary and truly, truly helps. Richard, thank you so much for sharing your wealth of knowledge and on maximizing those savings in the healthcare supply chain. And it's really been a pleasure speaking with you and kind of learning about the journey of Kermit and what you guys have accomplished, but are also looking to accomplish in the future. You know, thank you so much. I look forward to staying connected and talking again here in the near future.
Great, Bryce. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. Have a great day.